You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heart and Hand, the Rangers podcast. My name is David Edgar, and as always, I am your host, and I'm delighted to be joined this week by none other than the Sage of Saltcoats himself. It's Andy McGowan. Hello, Andy. How are we today after what was a pulsating, trademark copyright of the press, match at Ibrox yesterday?
I'm absolutely fine. I'm tip-top, actually. That might give you an idea of how my mood is for the rest of this pod.
Well, you don't drink, of course. A couple of our... we lost a couple of men down yesterday, I think it's fair to say. A couple of guys who noted interest in being on the pod today, but there's nothing worse than when your brain is telling you you can still drink the way you could when you were 20 and your body's going, no, you can't. And so best wishes to all of our listeners as well, who I'm sure a few of you found yourself in that condition today. But let's move on then. Of course, it was the Old Firm game, the biggest Old Firm game in forever, and definitely going to be the biggest one right up until the next one in a few weeks, which is even more crucial. I joked, Andy, that this was less of a Return of the Jedi than an Empire Strikes Back. Still questions coming out of the match after it. Now, Celtic, understandably, will be feeling in a good spot. If they win all their games, they can win the title, and there are six games to go. Equally, Rangers can go top of the league with six games to go on Wednesday night, and I think we are equally as valid in feeling that we can win the title. I think before the game, Celtic would have taken a draw more than Rangers would have, but given the way the game went, I think Rangers were probably the ones feeling a wee bit more content when the final whistle blew. It was a strange old afternoon.
Yeah, in post-match, there was a kind of quick arms race to see who could get the most positive spin on it, and there was, even on the radio, I could hear it on the bus, that they were kind of saying, well, who was the actual victors on the day, if you want to put it that way. And
nobody, there we go.
That's a literal sense, but the kind of, how can I put it, if you'd been in a one-day coma and you'd woke up and saw that Celtic had drew 3 each at Ibrox in the context of, you know, from one day to the next, then you'd probably say it was them. However, in the context of the match, and I know there's a bit of disagreement around this in the Rangers fraternity, but I'm very much convicted that we have got to come out of that with the better feeling. And I think even today, Callum McGregor's talking about, in inverted commas, disappointment on the bus, right? And then I watched the game back last night, and I could see after the game a fairly deliberate thing by Clement, which was to take the team round the park after the game. And I think he's been clever there, because I think our players would have went off the park when they eventually went up the tunnel. I think they would have been up the park with a really good feeling. I think he's once more kind of consolidated the fans and the team as much as you can do. So I took yesterday as a positive. And I know there'll be folks shouting at their device just now saying, "Aye, but Andy, you're always glass half full." I just think to be 2-0 down and then to have the gut punch of the Ida goal with 4 minutes to go or whatever it was, I think we've got to come out of that with the good feeling. Put it this way, David, when I woke up this morning, there wasn't that feeling in the pit of your stomach as you usually have after either a bad result or a lost opportunity.
Well, there are several factors in this. Firstly, joking apart, I was obviously being a wee bit facetious there, but joking apart, it was a draw at the end of the day. So both teams took a point and we go on as was. It means that there's one Old Firm match left and it is at Parkhead, but it is still to be played. So anybody claiming that they got the best or the worst out of it, I think just depends what side of the divide you're on, really, doesn't it, that you're going to come up with that. So I don't really tend to buy into that. I think that you just need to look at what happened, not what might happen. And that's what people are doing. They're using this to extrapolate further. And I suppose I'm going to be a wee bit hypocritical here because I'm going on feelings rather than logic. When we went 2-0 down yesterday, I thought the game was done. Mm-hmm. And that might sound a bit defeatist, but looking back, I found out that the last time Rangers came back from 2-0 down in an Old Firm game to not lose was 1987. It was mm-hmm. Graham Robertson's goal. So it isn't something that happens all that often. The first time in 37 years, it's rare. So when we got back to 2-2, and that is something that, you know, we just haven't really seen, to then concede the goal was an absolute hammer blow. And I think that it would have been very difficult to avoid the feeling, not the knowledge, the feeling that that might be an insurmountable blow. You saw the way Celtic celebrated, that they thought, that's it, that's it, that's a league-winning goal, that's it, done now. And I think that the Matondo goal has flipped the script a little bit, because I think there was a sense with Celtic when that goal went in, we've done what we always do, we've turned up in this game after maybe not being at their best recently, and we've won the game, and we've, even though they've came back, we've still found a way to, if you like, make it even more painful than if it just petered out as a 2-0. So when that goal went in from Matondo, it did really sort of, I'm like you, it kind of, my feeling on it was, this has been a weird year. Weird things mm-hmm. have been happening. Because realistically, when you sack a manager in September and bring a new manager in October, as an Old Firm, it generally means that you're in a position where you cannot win the league title because it's mm-hmm. so far away. That's a manager doesn't get sacked when he's 3 points behind the opposition. It happens when they look as though they're over the hill. No matter what a board will tell you about, oh, we wanted to go early enough, so imagine that. Nah, it's because you have to sack him because the fans have totally turned because the league's away. So we realistically shouldn't be in this position. Yet here we are. So I think it's been a strange year. I don't expect, by the way, every, you know, obviously both of them can't win all their fixtures, but they're non-Old Firm fixture. I would be surprised if both Rangers and Celtic take maximum points from it, to be honest. I think this mm-hmm. has got a few twists and turns to go. Maybe just based on, as I say, a feeling rather than any logic. But that is, I just think it's been such a strange year already that that might well be the case. But let's move to the game itself. Now, the team that was announced by the manager, a couple of interesting things about it. I think Scott Wright, who we won't go into because we've done it to death on here, and you and I have both said the same thing about Scott Wright. Nice lad, hard worker. Clearly, managers like his attitude, but doesn't deliver enough on the big stage when you need him to. But the manager went with him in the right wing area. I think that Dujon Sterling would have played there had Radovan Yilmaz been fit. He yep. wasn't. And that, again, interestingly, Borna Barisic not picked for that. Dujon Sterling goes in there, which even a few weeks ago I don't think would have been the case, which suggests to me that Barisic, who's leaving in the summer, we've heard rumours that he's already signed for Trabzonspor. The manager just didn't fancy him in that match, which I think says a lot. A couple of things that then left us, I think, in the first half in particular, I don't like a defence, Andy, that's all one-sided, which is what we had yesterday. We had four right-footed players playing in our defence yesterday. I think you're unbalanced when that happens, naturally. I just think it's it's impossible not to be slightly unbalanced. So I get it, circumstances dictated that. But what it maybe meant in the first half in particular was Celtic got a lot of joy down our right-hand side, because I think that Tavernier struggled badly in the first half. I think against Maeda, I've seen people say, oh, he always struggles. Well, no, he's games where he struggled and he's had games he's the better of them. The two of them, it's a good contest. And yesterday he gets off to the atrocious start. It's a freak goal, but nonetheless a bad goal for us to concede. Goldson's form has fallen off a cliff in the last month. And yesterday, probably for the first time, I watched him and I thought, his confidence has gone. And I've never thought that about him before. You know, even when I've maybe thought he's had a bad game or a bad spell, there's always been, you know, the belief. I just felt, looking at him yesterday, this is a guy who feels he can't do right for doing wrong. And Celtic exploited that in the first half.
Aye, the tactics yesterday were strangled at birth because of the goal. And I mean, we need to speak about that, because I felt the game plan went out the window as soon as that ball hit the back of the net for the next 20 to 25 minutes, because it was, I don't know about you, Davey, I'm pretty sure most of the listeners, I was shell shocked at that, to the point where I burst out laughing when it hit the net. I just thought,
I was thinking the stadium. I was in a bit of shock for the first 10, 15 minutes, just looking occasionally at the scoreboard to check, because it wasn't just that it was such an early goal, it was such a bizarre and disastrous one.
It was. You know, you build this up in your mind. I'm sure the players do as well, to visualise things. And here we are, 28 seconds into the game, and they've scored. So, you know, Scott Wright, everything else to do with the setup, you don't really get to answer that question now, because it was just finished by that point. So if you're feeling like that, you've got to wonder what the players are thinking on the part. And I think it was survival mode for the next 10, 15 minutes. You could see it in Tavernier's play, who's always very sure-footed. But to your point about Goldson, I think most of this season he's been off it. And I don't mean that, you know, selling goals or whatever, but, you know, Miovski has caused him major problems. He's just been not as sure-footed, even on the ball, which has been one of his strengths. I think it's too early to think about next season. I'm not even thinking about next season, but you can extrapolate out what might happen, because we've got Davis and Balogun and Goldson as centre-halves, and that, if you want to say, that's over four, you know, first squad choices. And you're completely right that Sterling on the right-hand side changes that game, because I think it allows Tavernier to be a wee bit more looser and free and play his game. And Maeda would have been stifled much, much more with a powerhouse like Sterling in front of him. So I just thought that the first half, you made a comment yesterday, David, between us, that you said that you thought the wind had a lot to do with yesterday.
Well, and yeah.
I watched the game back, and you can see even at O'Reilly's penalty, the wind is howling, their shirts are blowing. And I do think there was something in that, that attacking the Cortland yesterday was an advantage.
Yeah, I'm not. This isn't excuses, because I think it applies to both teams. So if I'm offering an excuse for Rangers, I'm accidentally simultaneously doing it for Celtic second half. That I was speaking to an ex-player, and he said people don't take into account how difficult it is to play in high winds. He said that, you know, people think rain and, you know, you know, extreme heat, they go, oh, that must be difficult to play in. He said, but it's actually wind, because you lose trust in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You can't judge a ball that's coming through, so you second guess yourself. You play a pass and then you put too much on it because you think, I need to correct for the wind, and then suddenly the wind dies down or it raises right up. He says it's an absolute nightmare and it gets into your head. And I do think that there's something in that five goals were scored down at the Cortland yesterday. Now, the game situation obviously changes. We know that within a game, so you do need to take those factors in. But I think there's something in that, you know, Celtic in the first half were miles ahead of us, and I won't sit here and try and deny that. The Rangers were second best, everything, weren't picking up loose ball. As you say, I think our heads went for about 20 minutes after the goal.
It's only natural. Absolutely.
Well, as I say, as a supporter, I was just sitting there going, what the bloody hell is going on here? And Rangers were desperately poor. But in the second half, Celtic weren't making things happen. They couldn't get the ball to stick, and their defence struggled very badly in the second half. So, yeah, look, you have to play in it. Zero doubt, we live in a windy country, but I do think it was a factor yesterday for both teams.
the story of the press for both teams there is probably played out in what we're talking about, because the first half, I thought Celtic would sit, and I said pre-match on Twitter, I think they'll do a Benfica. I watched Benfica, and we've been a wee bit susceptible on the break. If you look at the Hibs goal, for example, and the Benfica goal. But they didn't. They really pressed, and they're actually quite good at it with the two Japanese players that push forward and sink. And then what I was heartened by, and this is credit to Rangers, is I think that the only way we beat Celtic or we compete with Celtic is when we try to play football from the back. And I was actually quite glad to see the by kicks were played short in the box to the either centre half, and we try to play out, because I think at Parkhead especially, I think as soon as we started launching it, we lose it. But the danger is, as you say, you're trying to play in that wind with people pressing you hard, and it does take a lot of balls and concentration, and there will be errors made. So I think that's what, certainly the first goal came for, you know, I think Tavernier's misjudged the flight, Goldson misjudged the flight, and then all of a sudden he's had to sprint where he didn't really need to if he'd read it right first time. So I think the wind's played a part in that. And there was other instances where, you know, boys back to Butland were causing us all sorts of heart attacks. So I think there was something in it, but, you know, I do fully amplify your point that this isn't excuse making. I think it's just a factor in the game that you can't ignore. I don't think you can ignore it.
No, I think both sets of players would tell you the same thing after it as well. I mean, obviously, given the fact Rangers were two down at half-time and Celtic have effectively lost the second half 3-1, footballers look for excuses, I get it. But it really was, if you weren't at the game yesterday, it really was swirling and it was unpredictable. So it wasn't like it was just constantly gusting in one direction. It would spin and it would turn. And you saw that, I think, with some simple passes. That said, mm-hmm. Rangers' pass in the first half was bloody awful, Andy, and a lot of that was mental things. But I think that the team, unnerved as they were after the opening goal, were looking around at each other and thinking, oh my God, every one of us is having a nightmare here.
I think Lawrence epitomised that. Lawrence is usually, well, Lawrence was in the team for his passing, let's face it. He's been excellent in that kind of quarterback role where he flits between the midfield and supporting the striker. And there was a couple of occasions where he took the wrong decision, but the execution was woeful as well. Everything seemed to be rushed and nothing clicked. You know, Silva wasn't holding the ball with a man at his back. Dessers just wasn't getting anything at all, really. He was working hard against Carter Vickers, but there was nothing really A falling for him, but there was nothing B being created for him. And then, as we spoke about right earlier on, he was just non-existent, right? And I actually said after the Hibs game, I think he might start, right? I think if he likes him. And I noticed against Hibs that he had a different movement in him, that something that's obviously been practiced and coached on the training field, where he takes the ball and moves forward with one movement, where he usually stops and turns. And when he gets pockets of space, that can be effective. But by the time we were looking for him to do stuff, we were in that 20-minute, as I say, survival mode, and really that's not his game at all. So there was a lot went wrong in the first half, but I cling to the hope, and this might be naivety on my part, I cling to the hope that if we hadn't conceded so fast and in such a manner, that we'd have probably felt our way into the game, and who knows what's happened. But that goal goes in, all bets are off. And as we'll talk about the rest of the game, I think I'll jump to the end and say that actually I think we need to take a lot of credit for recovering for that alone.
Well, just as we were thinking that if anything could go wrong, it would. Ball into the box, gathered by Jack Butland eventually. No real danger. Next thing we see, up comes the VAR check. It's a check for a handball penalty. Any complaints about this? Conor Goldson's elbow? I'll slag referees. I've done it before and I'll do it again when I think they've had bad calls or whatever. This, unfortunately, I don't like the rule. By the way, the modern rule, I don't see how a player's seeking to gain an advantage in a situation like that, but it's a penalty.
Under the rules, it's a penalty, and it's absolutely folly to suggest anything else. He's misjudged the flight, he's jumped up, his arms out, he's made himself bigger, whatever way you want to call it. It's below the T-shirt line that they always talk about. I don't know if they claimed it. I don't know if there was much claims.
They didn't.
This is what VAR's for, and I'm sure we'll get into refereeing and everything else, David, but that was the right decision, that was the right call. I think I think Rangers fans are mature enough to kind of not deny the undeniable, which is something we see time and time again in Scottish football. It's a clear penalty. But again, could we have handled it better? I thought, speaking of Goldson's performance, it was like, what are you doing? Why are we jumping like that? And if you really want to give him the benefit of the doubt, you could say the flight of the ball in the wind and all this kind of stuff, but really, he should be dealing with that. And in a bit of defence to him, most of his Rangers career, he has dealt with stuff like that quite admirably. He can cut out Benfica a couple of weeks ago away, but he's dealt with that. It was a bit of an aberration.
Yeah, it was. And it just, at that point, seemed like one of those days. Half-time, a lot of anger in the stadium at the performance. I saw a few people suggesting that they felt the manager should have made changes in the first half. I think the reason that he didn't is that's almost a signal that everything is completely... I think it gives more to the opposition than it does. The gamble he takes, obviously, I suppose, is getting through to half-time, although there's a suggestion that maybe we should have done better. We mixed up corners at last. Goldson's had a great opportunity, but he's headed over. Yeah, it really was. It was a Saturday. He's got to score it. He's heading, attacking headers have been way off it all season. But then Silva's a chance just before half-time, and we could have gone in at 2-1. So the manager gets us there at 2-0. As I say, there's not a lot of hope in the room at this point. But an interesting thing, Rabbi Matondo said afterwards that the manager said to him, "That's the first I've not recognised you out there, that 45 minutes. He's like, I didn't recognise our team there. And Rabbi said the players really took that to heart, and you saw that in the second half.
I think what we know about Clement is that no matter how this season pans out, he's performed a minor miracle to get us to this position whatsoever. And you're talking about changing the first half, changes at half time. I think it was you at one point phrased it something about, you know, he plays the 90 minutes out in his head before Friday. And the bench and everything else. And I think to make changes in the first half would have added to the panic, and it would have added to the...
That's what I was trying to... Thank you for putting... That's what I was trying to say. I think when you see that, I'd like to see the stats of how often that happens and it works, because to me, that signals this is a disaster, everything's gone wrong.
That's somebody unravelling the lifeboats whilst the band's still playing and they're still serving canapés. You know, it's no... You can see it and you know exactly what it means, and it doesn't bode well for anything. And, you know, to get in at 2-0 was actually a triumph, because they could have been 3 or 4-0 up quite easily. Hatate has a great shot. It was his
lucky triumph, more than any great skill. One brilliant save from Jack Butler notwithstanding.
And balls across the front of our goals. And, you know, it could have been a disaster, a real 4-5-0. Getting at half time, that's no exaggeration, because it felt that was the way the game was going, you know, and nothing was falling for us. We weren't getting breaks, even though we weren't playing well. So to get in at 2-0, and I'm Mr. Optimism, I cannot see a way back. In fact, I'm thinking about damage limitation and, you know, psychological damage for the rest of the campaign. Because before we went into this game, and I think I said it in the extra with Cammy a few weeks ago before the Hibs game, I said something along the lines of, if it doesn't go our way, we're still alive. So let's face it, if we get beat yesterday and then hopefully win on Wednesday against Dundee, then the damage is there, but it's no fatal. And we all know, getting into the split, anything can happen. And as you've said, in a weird, weird season, it just feels as if you can never write us off. And with this manager, you can never write us off, because his belief is absolute. My belief's absolute. I've got to say that I've bought in so much to Clement that it's actually ridiculous, because I just believe that so much has happened this season that you have to believe. If we're trying to say that going to Parkhead and winning is a big, big ask, which it is, it's no as big as ask of what we've achieved this year, which is clawing back whatever it was, 8-point turnaround against a Celtic team where we've got a new manager and we've got a squad of players that we would have gladly jettisoned every single one of them this time in October. So what we've achieved this year means that you've got to have a semblance of, hold on, maybe there's more about us than we maybe give them credit for. But even yesterday at halftime, I'm sitting talking to my nephew and I'm like, you know, this is bad. This is really, really bad. And I expected three changes. I expected Silva to go off for a start, because I thought it was really, really poor first half. And I thought they would try and find a way of getting Stirling into the middle of the park to get a grip on what was happening there, because Diamandi and Lundstrom were trying their hardest, obviously, but there was just there was too much space. So I was interested to see what team came out in the second half.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, Diamandi and Lundstrom, I'm not sure, have quite got on each other's wavelength yet. You know, and I think that my concern about Lundstrom is, in these games, does he have the legs, basically? I will say that for him, he was resilient and he did come back in the second half. Diamandi wouldn't be the first one in an Old Firm game, especially with that start, to go, what the hell's happening? But I thought he played his way into it. And certainly showed a lot of promise in terms of what he will deliver for his long term. Silva then helps us get back into the game. He goes into the Celtic box, chops back, and gets kicked across the knee by Alistair Johnson. John Beaton books him for a dive. And I can understand why, because this has been a topic, a discussion among Rangers fans about his diving, his propensity to dive. I always think with players, it's not so much diving as rolling about after it that draws the attention to you. And he did do that. He does do that where he gets a knot and he rolls and he lies down as if he's mortally hurt. It's something, unfortunately, we see a lot in the Premier League from England. Players do it. And it's clearly something that's taught, right? Let's be honest about this. It's clearly something that teams, bigger teams down there, teach their players. I just don't think we as a nation particularly like it. There is a difference between feeling contact and going down and then rolling about like you're badly hurt only to spring up into life a few seconds later. I don't think we care for that as a country. But VAR intervenes. The ref goes over as I look at it. It's a clear penalty. And I'm going to just get out my soapbox here to while you're there, high horse, come over. Pet hate of mine, absolute pet hate of mine with punditry. And ex-players are terrible for this. He got a touch on the ball. Yes, he did. Right? He doesn't deflect it away from Fabio Silva. If you see, Silva is still in control of the ball because all Johnson has done is just flicked it up a little bit ahead, ideally where Fabio Silva would have placed it himself. Right? That's all he does. Doesn't deflect it, doesn't clear it. And then as he follows through, he kicks him on the knee. It's a penalty kick. End of story.
A lot to unpack there, Davey, and I'll just shove you off your soapbox and step up in it because, first of all, the penalty, it's a penalty, as you say. The past, I don't know how many dozen contentious decisions we've had obviously get poured over in Scotland, and then on a Monday morning you get Dermot Gallagher on Sky with usually a couple of co-presenters giving their opinion. And every time he says, aye, right decision. And you wonder, what is the problem in this country? And with this penalty, he's this morning as we record, he said, aye, it's a penalty, and he's two co-presenters. And there's not even a debate around it. It's like, aye, contact, and that's it. But I listened to the other podcast with two ex-Scottish referees, and they're like, no, it's not a penalty. And I think there's an ignorance around exactly what you just explained, which is contact. Although it's not always a foul, well, it's not always, changing the movement of the player that's impacted. There is clear rules now about what this means, and that there was Whether he went down intentionally or no is not really the point, because
no, it's not the point at all.
You can't tell, I can't tell, nobody can actually tell when you're running at that pace what happened. Now, I think he dived, right? But there was contact, and therefore that makes that a penalty. And I'm going to go a wee bit further here about Silva, because his histrionics yesterday were fairly mortifying, let's be honest. However, there's a massive selective righteousness in Scotland. And I don't know if it's even a Rangers thing or what, but when it comes to diving and the dark arts and all that kind of stuff, you know, the treatment yesterday, and I mentioned it on Twitter about Sutton talking, we know what takes away for Sutton. He's a shock jock. His Celtic narrative is driven every opportunity he can. But I thought that repeated use of the word cheat and cheat and cheat and cheat. He may be a cheat, but he's no more than a cheat than every other player that does it in Scotland, including several Celtic players who we all know, including Sutton himself, who made a career out of backing into defenders and then collapsing on his arse, right? So I find this kind of righteousness and indignation absolutely laughable. I also find it hilarious that Celtic were waved away from Parkhead with a big banner saying, by all means necessary. You know, so by all means necessary. So we've noted it, by all means necessary. I couldn't give a shit about this, David, I'll be honest with you. If Rangers win the league by a dive, a penalty win by a dive, then I'll leave everybody else to the righteousness, because I couldn't give a shit, because I've had my fill of it, to be quite honest. Right?
No, I think a side that've got Kyogo in it that are complaining that people go down easy is taking a piss. I think Chris Sutton complaining about people going down easy when he was one of the biggest divers you'll ever see in your life is at it. With the likes of Sutton and Stewart, Sutton is doing it for a reason. He wants to make it very difficult. He's playing, first of all, to the gallery. He's doing what Sky employ him for, right? And that's the other thing. You know, your ire should be at Sky. This is what they want in the football coverage. It was the same with Liverpool, Man United yesterday, where they get Neville and Sutton in there. They want clips they can share on social media. That's how they think they keep people engaged, and it bores the arse off me. But Sutton knows what he's doing. In the case of Stewart, he is that thick. That's the difference. I mean, Stewart is just a very unintelligent human being, and he's one of these unfortunates that aren't quite intelligent enough to know how thick they are, and therefore that's why he talks a lot of nonsense. But the idea is to make it impossible for Silva to get decisions in the future.
Well, that was why he got booked. And this is the thing. Beaton's obviously thought, he's taking a piss at me here. There was two or three instances where it was borderline play acting. I would ask the question around the Johnson block, and I use a block generously, the word block generously, because if you watch that back, Silva makes a run, nowhere near the ball, he's making a run into a channel, and Johnson steps across him, and it's not quite a forearm smash, but it's a yellow card every day. I'm going to ask you a question. Would Johnson have been booked if Silva hadn't rolled about the ground as if he was, you know, he'd been shot by an electric dart? So, in that instance,
that's
again,
why players do it.
Well, this is why I'm in no way defending it, because I'm looking at him like, get up. You know, I'd need sympathy for him at that point in time. He's having a poor game. You're getting beat, everything else. But when I watched it back last night, I'm like, maybe if Colum, who, because it happened right in front of Colum as the fourth official, and there's VAR as well, and he's obviously went down for a reason. If he gets straight back up, game rages on, game plays on, and Johnston gets away with it. Johnston's an extremely physical player. He's actually clever with it. And, you know, I quite admire him for that, actually, as a football player. But that was where, by all means necessary, you know, he's been smashed in the face there. He's been blocked off. And he got a booking eventually, and that was because of Silva. So this is where the righteousness annoys me, because if we'd been righteous and said, get up, play the game, you know, Queensbury rules and all this kind of stuff, Johnson doesn't get booked, that can be a game-changing moment, because, you know, another couple of inches and that penalty would have been a red card, and a second yellow card and nothing else.
No, I don't disagree with that. But we get the penalty. The correct decision is reached. Up steps James Tavernier, and he puts it away, thankfully. An absolutely brilliant penalty in the top corner. It really was. It was inch perfect. And that guess is going. And within a minute, we think we're level after Rangers break forward, and the ball eventually comes to Cyril Dessers, who finishes. But up goes the VAR sign again. And I've got to be honest here now. This is an interesting discussion point. I didn't think it would be given, because I'd seen the foul early on in the move. I'd seen the foul. I thought they'll pull it back for that. Mm. Now, that has led to some discussion because I don't think anyone thinks it isn't a foul. It's the same tackle, really, that we get the penalty for on Silva. So it is a foul, right? I'd be mm-hmm. a hypocrite if I said it wasn't. There is the argument about, well, how far back are we going to go? Do we go back 10 seconds, a minute? What's the decision? Now, what the referees are thinking is that Celtic, the phase of play hasn't changed because Celtic have never got possession. And I know that some fans are saying, well, Celtic touch the ball in that, but they don't have it under their control as the argument from referees. We can debate this all wrong. Maybe there should be looking at maybe a time limit, you know, of, well, if it's 10 seconds or a distance or whatever, I don't know. But I've got to be honest and say, if that was at the other end and that goal had been given, I would be fucking raging.
It was the right decision. And again, I go back to, we're not going to deny the undeniable. It was, I thought it was a foul in real time. I was actually surprised to see beaten play wave play on. But this is what VAR has done to the game. And that's not a criticism. This is the way it's got to be. If he, in that split second, thinks that might be a foul, but I'm not sure, he waves play on and sees what happens. And then it's for VAR to actually dictate what happened. Because if he doesn't and he blows for it and he's not quite sure, then he's killed it. Right, and it's changed that moment in the game. And we can get around the arguments about all the celebrations and the emotions and then for it to be quashed and everything else. Eventually, the right decision has been reached. So I sound like Martin Ramsay here, but I think that VAR is here to stay, and that is a perfect example of a major football game in our country that will decide, you know, the league and Champions League money and everything else, where the correct decision was reached. And it's just unfortunate that the collateral damage is the fans who have to celebrate and then have their dreams and hopes crushed immediately. That's the way it is.
See, on that, I actually think that this was, in a way, the worst possible thing that could happen to us because the adrenaline is absolutely flowing.
Yes.
We think we've made it back to two each, and then it's taken away, and we drop a level, yeah. I think, for the next 10, 15 minutes or so. Rangers drop a level a bit, and you kind of, I was saying to Stevie up on the gantry and to Stuart I was there with that I think this is petering out, and it turns out I'm spectacularly wrong because there's three more goals after I said that, but at that point I just felt that has kind of halted our momentum, and Celtic were very clever in that 10-15 minute spell. They used tactical fouling, they were slowing the game down, and I thought that it had worked, if I'm being honest.
So this is what I'm talking about with Rangers and the fact that I have belief in it, and I don't think we can be counted out until, you know, we're really counted out, because the Hibs game, we had the missed penalty, the goal, the chopped off for encroachment. We had the loss of a goal bang on half time, and then we recovered for it. And I thought it was a massive, massive moment in the season, far less the game last week against Hibs. We've then, in this game, as we've spoke already, and the word shell shock is used deliberately because we had the goal, the Maeda goal, we had the penalty VAR, which, you know, the ground falls silent, sucks the air out of the ground and you know what's coming. And then the penalty we score was so important in terms of getting the crowd back, because the crowd, as you said, Davey, there's no room for rationale in an Old Firm game. So I'm sitting there saying, oh, the crowd needs to get behind them, but, you know, it's impossible because everybody's just reacting in the moment and they're not going to check themselves. So when that goal, that penalty goes in, and at the time it did, you know, there's loads of time left. We had won back the crowd and the momentum was with us. We then get that goal, which was part of that momentum that we just created. And for that then, as you say, to be absolutely skewered in the most cruel fashion, that's another shell shock moment in that game that we had to recover for. So this is why I'm sitting looking at this team and saying, what's going on? It's not quite supernatural, but there's stuff going on there that you can't discount in terms of the je ne sais quoi, the grit, the underlying resilience that you don't just put into somebody. It has to be created through experience, bad experience and good experience. And we seem to have got a wee bit of that just now. Last week against Hibs and this week against Celtic, I think there's been a lot of micro tests, and I say micro in the sense that it happens during a game in the moment and you have to recover, that we have passed with flying colours. And I think they'll count big time when we add all these wee inches up, hopefully.
Well, after that, as I say, it was looking though it was maybe sliding away. But Rangers, I think our second goal was a testament to just what you've been talking about, which is more just sheer bloody mindedness and perseverance. And Rangers get going again, another attack. Eventually it falls to Abdallah Sima on the edge of the box. He has a shot and it deflects up and off Carl McGregor for his second Rangers goal down there. Well done, son. Two goals for a boyhood Rangers fan at the Copeland end and Old Firms. You can't ask for much more than that. And it goes in. And look, you know, we'd be fortunate that deflection go anywhere. But after the first goal, I think that's perfectly fair. And we get to two each. And at that point, I think, right, we can go in and win it. And then this is the one for me. This goal is unforgivable. Cantwell doesn't do enough in a tackle inside their half. The ball breaks. Nobody goes to Bernardo, nobody goes with him, takes the run, even takes a foul. He plays it into Ida. He's got too much time and space, and then just to gap it off, it goes right through Jack Butland. This was a horrible goal, and I have to admit that after coming back from 2-0, because we've been behind for 22 seconds, right? We've been level at this point in the game for about a minute and a half, and for that to go in just felt like the biggest boot in the stones imaginable.
It was... The universe, you know, hates us, and you just felt this is just not going to happen. This is the way it's written. I was really disappointed with, I'm not singling him out, but Dowell is just on the park. Bernardo, he should have been closer to Bernardo in the first place, but even when Bernardo gets the ball, there's a bit of distance between them. And I'm not saying he could have got him or he should have, you know, tackled him or whatever, but there's a jogging back scenario there where Bernardo's moving fast with the ball with intent towards the penalty box, the centre of the penalty box, and Dale's kind of jogging.
We've switched off after the goal.
He should be absolutely busting a gut and taking a foul or whatever it takes.
Yeah, but I think we're still celebrating the equaliser.
Exactly. But Bernardo finds the guy's space, and then I think Suter and Sterling kind of get too close together, and then that's blocking off Butland's view, and it's a low, hard shot, which, you know, most days you'd expect Butland to get that with his feet or something. He's usually good at that. But it was just the lapse of time is so small that it busts you. And I go back to the point that we're repeating time and again here about resilience and belief and recovery powers. I thought that was it.
Not going to sit here and lie to the listeners. I thought that's it, it's done. And I thought the psychology of that and the way that the game had panned out, it's going to be very difficult for us to recover and go and, you know, come back and win this league title. But then cometh the 93rd minute, cometh the man, Rabi Matondo, gets the ball out wide, comes inside and unleashes a ball. I have to say, I'm gantry and sort of down towards the Broomland, right, that side of the gantry. The second he hit that, I thought, that's in. And what I did was almost instinctively, I watched the guys behind the Copeland, like behind the goal, and they all get up before the ball's hit the back of net because they know it's in. Absolutely fantastic. Can't call it a goal of his life, incidentally, maybe because of importance, but he hit the same one the week before against Hibs. He ran straight to the manager, which is always nice to see, but also because he said the manager had been saying, did you see Kevin De Bruyne's goal yesterday? And he said, yeah, well, he says, look at that. He's so good. He does that every week. That's a level that you need to be aspiring to and doing that. So he ran over to say to him, well, that wasn't bad, was it? And I loved that. It was a great wee story from Rabi Matondo afterwards. But my goodness, what an important goal for us. Because, look, it's all right saying, as people have been doing, and we discussed it at the start of the show, that Celtic have the advantage, and that's absolutely fair. I always think, so long as you've got it in your own hands, I'm reasonably content at that, and we do. But that is a three-point hit of the boot, because it gets us a point and takes two away from them. It's huge.
And beyond the literal points, Davey, the kind of psychological impact that had for us, as I say, they go on the bus disappointed because, you know, they should have won that, and they should have won it a couple of times during the game. And we are going in the park acclaiming the I was going to say the moral victor. I don't want to use that phrase, but you know, the
no, kind of, I don't want the manager used that, and maybe it was a language thing.
I think it was.
There's no such thing as a moral victory in an Old Firm game. Either win it or you don't, or you know. So you can win, lose, or draw, but you can't have a moral victory.
Aye, it allows Clement to use it to his advantage in terms of that.
Aye, he's speaking to his players there. He's not speaking to us.
I think the players went off feeling good. If you watch that back at the end of the Sky coverage, you see the players smiling, waving to their families, waving to fans, all the rest of it. No, quite, we've won the game victories, but you know, there was a sense of achievement there that they go in there thinking either, but no, no, quite, we dodged a bullet or we've got a jail. I think there was actually an achievement there. But to Matondo's goal at Parkhead in the last game, what separated it was their quality turned up and ours never. If you think back to chances that Cantwell had, chances Dessers had, chances McCausland had, we fluffed the lines badly that day and a couple of really, really good opportunities that were presented. And they obviously had a wonderful goal for Kyogo and Bernardo took his chance. And that was our quality yesterday, because that's the win where the clock's ticking down, the crowd's on you. And if that goes to the bar, it's finished, right? So for Matondo to do that, and I was going to say instinctively, but it's no, because he's been practicing it. And this is a testament to the manager. Things have been recognised in training and the work with players to do things. I spoke about Wright earlier on in that movement that I seen against Hibs where he'd done it a couple of times. Matondo has been working on this because we've seen this when he was playing in Belgium for the YouTube rules, you know, the cut in for the left and the shot, the cut in for the left and the cross. And he's not really done it that often for us, but it looks as if he could do it quite often for us now, because if you think that's his second goal against Celtic. And I don't know why we can't get a tune out. If Celtic can use Maeda in his pace, because Maeda isn't technically brilliant, I don't know why we can't use this boy in a similar fashion.
His second goal against Celtic.
Yeah, I mean, did he not score in the 3-0 game?
Aye, and it got ruled out.
Did he not score that day?
No, he was offside. The three goal scorers were Cantwell, Suter, and Sakala.
Ech, well, who am I, Stato? I don't
know.
For
fuck's sake, how old are you?
In the heater, literally.
No, but see, be honest, I don't, you know, game dead rubbers at the end of the season.
Aye.
Yeah, I understand. But he did have the ball in the net, but it was ruled out.
Aye, well, there you go, technically. But we'll just edit that whole section out, David, and cut the pod down to 10 minutes.
Enough, we really won't. So, like, it's a fabulous bit of work. It gets us a draw. And, as I say, the arguments will rage about who it suits best, who's best suited, whatever. I'm a great believer in, we could argue all day, the cows come home about it. What is a fact is that we go to Dundee on Wednesday night, and knowing that a victory takes us to the top of the league with six matches to go, that's an incentive. That should be a huge incentive. Pitch worries notwithstanding, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a biggie. It always was going to be a biggie, and I'm worried about the pitch, but you know, Clement strikes me as a guy that takes things as they come, and he wanted to play the game that day when it was postponed. Seemed very, very disappointed. So the team will be ready for it. I think we're a wee bit more adaptable than we were at any time last season or at the start of the season under Beale. And we have the ability to mix it a wee bit, Davey. And what I mean by that is we don't need to play real fast-flowing, free passing football. I think we've got ability to get goals and dig things out, and I really hope that happens. I'm delighted to see Sima's back. I think he adds another dimension to the attacking strength, pace, goal-scoring threat, everything. And it's really, really well timed that he's came back. And probably, I don't think I'm exaggerating, he probably turned the game for us on yesterday and Sunday against Celtic, because him coming on at half time, you could see the crowd were delighted to see him. And it changed that right hand side for us defensively as well as attacking wise for Tavernier. So we go with optimism. The safety guard in me says that if something goes wrong up there, we're still alive. I just have this unshakable belief until I don't. I've got to say, I cannot believe we're in this position. And I said it on Twitter yesterday. I says, listen, if we'd blew 8-point lead, won, you know, 10, 7 out of 9 points against Celtic, go to their manager sacked, and we were sitting here like this, I wouldn't be seeing this as a triumphant season. I'd be saying, what the hell's happened? So I just hope and pray that my belief isn't misplaced, but I don't know, David. There's something about the team just now that I think they believe more than the fans. Do you know that?
Well, I think it's a split, but I'm kind of like you. I believe right up until it becomes pointless to do so, and I'm nowhere near that as of yet. And I agree with you, incidentally. I think that Celtic fans and their quieter, more reflective moments might
absolutely
be thinking, my goodness, you know, this was a Rangers team that their fans are not seeing as vintage, are not seeing as a wonderful team, that had to sack a manager, that we had an 8-point lead over, that we've taken 7 out of 9 against, and we just can't, and they're ahead of us, which we could be on Wednesday night. That would be a worry to me. So, but, you know, trying to apply logic to what is often not a logical situation. Mm-hmm. Right then, folks, that will do us for this week here on Heart and Hand. There's loads more coverage of the Old Firm game, Rangers in general, over on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/heartandhand. You can join up from just $1.99 per month over there and hear more from me, Andy, and all the other podders. If not, you like our free shows, Martin's Dominant will be here with you on Wednesday, and Cammy will be here on Thursday to look backwards at the Dundee game and ahead to the match with Ross County at the weekend. My thanks to our executive producers Mike Lee and Paul Miles, and my thanks of course to the wonderful Andy McGowan.
My pleasure, thanks for having me on.
Right folks, I'll talk to you here this time next week. Until then, more than the Ted, 6 points please. Take care everybody, bye bye.
Podcast Network.